Israel gives the green light to double its settler population in the occupied Golan Heights 40 years after it had annexed the Syrian territory. The Gaza Strip registers its first case of Omicron as the enclave struggles to contain the spread of COVID-19 amid Israeli blockade. Also, the surge in COVID cases ground hundreds of more flights and ruined Christmas plans for millions worldwide. I'm Marcia Hashim. I appreciate you being with us. Now, the Israeli regime approves a plan to double its settler population in the occupied Golan Heights.
Friends, this is our moment. This is the moment for the Golan Heights. A combination of circumstances has led us to take today a dramatic government decision to channel considerable resources, around $300 million, to strengthen communities in the Golan Heights. After many static years regarding the scope of community life, our goal today is to double the population of the Golan Heights.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett unveiled the plan earlier on Sunday during a weekly cabinet meeting. Around 25,000 Israelis are currently living in the occupied Golan Heights. Israel annexed the territory in December of 1981, a move never recognized by the international community. Syria has repeatedly reaffirmed its sovereignty over the Golan Heights and demanded an end to Israel's occupation of the area. Well, let me cross over to Ramallah, joined by Mona Candil. Mona, good to have you. Well, fill us in on this latest situation. I mean, what does it appear that the Israeli regime is after by announcing now a plan to double its settler population in the occupied Golan Heights?
Good evening, Marzia. As you have said, we are speaking about the Golan Heights. Of course, Israel has captured and occupied the Golan Heights where Syrian Druze actually living there. And it's controlled by the Israelis, like Al-Quds that was occupied from the Palestinians in 1967. Now, there was an agreement while U.S. Former President Donald Trump was the President of the United States with the Israeli Prime Minister then, Netanyahu, to give the Israelis sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said he intends to double the number of the Israeli settlers there. We are speaking about some tens of thousands of Israeli settlers, of course, are living in the Golan Heights. This means he would be approving millions of dollars in order to encourage the settlers to move to the Golan Heights and in order to build new settlements and expand the already settlements there to bring and increase the number of settlers who are living in the Golan Heights. Of course, this is illegal because at the end of the day, as the Palestinians are demanding that the Israeli occupation must come to an end and that Jerusalem and Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, at least those lands that were occupied in 1967, should be part of the future Palestinian state. It's the same thing. Syrians who are still living in the Golan Heights are demanding that Israel must leave the Golan Heights and this part of land must be under the Syrian control as it should be.
All right, thanks so much for being with us on Ramallah. Mona Candil. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Authority is demanding international action to protect Palestinians in the face of increasing violence by Israeli settlers, which has left hundreds injured in recent days. The authority says the Israeli regime must be held accountable for a surge in what it called terrorist attacks by settlers against defenseless Palestinians. Meantime, Palestinian factions are calling for the formation of local protection committees across the West Bank. The northern West Bank has been seriously tense in recent days, with hundreds of settlers and soldiers attacking Palestinian residents. Last night, Israeli troops attacked the village of Borka, wounding nearly 250 Palestinians. The village sits near the site of a former settlement called Homesh. Israeli military destroyed that settlement in 2005, but now settlers say they want to return.
Israel is stepping up its acts of violence against Palestinians with impunity. Attacks by settlers have grown more audacious recently. In the latest incident, over 250 Palestinian protesters were injured in an Israeli attack on the village of Borka near Nablus in the occupied West Bank that happened late Sunday. From live rounds and tear gas to rubber bullets and stun grenades, the Israeli forces fired everything they could to ward off the Palestinian protesters. It all started when the Israeli army moved in, deploying soldiers to the Nablus-Jenin road to secure dozens of buses packed with settlers. They also closed off the entrance to the village of Borka. And that infuriated the Palestinians and triggered protests. In recent days, Borka has been a flashpoint of clashes. Israeli settlers, with protection from the army, have attempted to raid Palestinian houses there. In a separate accident that happened a few days ago, an Israeli settler ran over a Palestinian woman, killing her near Ramallah in the northern West Bank. It came just hours after settlers attacked a nearby village that rapidly escalated into a round of violence, with Israeli troops firing rubber bullets and tear gas and injuring at least 125 Palestinians. Pro-Palestinian activist Paul Lorodi believes that Tel Aviv is seeking a policy of isolating Palestinians and forcing them out of their homes.
But the strategy of the Israelis has been to surround large cities like Nablus, as they did in Qadqiliyah, and to isolate them and to destroy their economy and to force Palestinians to find work elsewhere.
The atrocities go on, but the international community remains silent. That has raised criticisms that the lack of global reaction to the situation in fact gives the green light to the Israeli regime to continue with its unjust policies. Even the UN has lashed out at the world community for remaining tight-lipped in the face of the Israeli crimes. UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Michael Link, says the international community must hold Israel accountable for its occupation of Palestine. He says Tel Aviv is refusing to comply with the UN resolutions, including UN Security Council Resolution 2334, which calls for an end to settlement expansion in the occupied territories. Anti-war activist Ken Stone believes a concerted international effort is needed to tackle the situation.
Behind the colonial project in Palestine is the might of the U.S. empire. And the U.S. and its allies, including, unfortunately, Canada, enable this kind of mistreatment of the Palestinians.
Palestinians are witnessing bolder and more violent attacks with each passing day, and they are waiting to see when the international community will finally move to stop the injustice.
Well, a new challenge to Gaza's fragile health system. The territory under an Israeli blockade for over 14 years now reports its first Omicron case.
We announced the registration of the first case of the Omicron strain in the Gaza Strip, and this confirms that this virus will spread on a large scale, as it is spread throughout the world of which we are a part.
The health ministry says the patient is a Gaza resident who was infected within the territory. The Gaza Strip has a population of 2.2 million people. It has registered nearly 190,000 COVID cases and almost 1,700 related deaths since the start of the pandemic. Now there are fears that the Palestinian territory will run into trouble. That's because Omicron spreads fast and Gaza's health system is not well equipped due to the Israeli blockade. Now, the system has repeatedly been hit by crises in the past amid shortages of supplies. Ashraf Shannon in Gaza says Palestinians there have to brace themselves for the worst COVID situation amid shortages of medical supplies caused by the Israeli blockade.
The discovery of the first case of the Omicron variant today came as a shock for Palestinians in Gaza. Now people here have to brace themselves for the worst, as this is the cold winter season, also the flu season, and Gaza been hit hard with the COVID-19 since last year. Especially that the Israeli regime continues to place tight restrictions on the entry of medicines, medical supplies. Israel refuses to allow medical supplies to come into Gaza. They're not allowing spare parts to come in to fix the equipment that are breaking down because of the use and because of the unstable power supplies in Gaza, and this reminds me of the situation with electricity. People with COVID-19 and people who are on hospital beds need electricity 24/7, and this is very hard to obtain in Gaza, where you have 8 hours of electricity and nearly 12 hours of outages.
Now it's time for this hour's news review. The Yemeni army has just announced new military achievements against the Saudi-led coalition at war with the impoverished country for nearly 7 years now. The army spokesman said they seized over 1,200 square kilometers in the northern Al-Jouf province from Saudi-backed forces. Yahya Saadi said the province is now almost completely liberated. He added the Saudi-backed forces suffered heavy human and material losses. Saadi said the Yemeni army will respond to attacks with attacks and will carry out unique and special operations to defend Yemen. The official said the army seeks to enter a new round of legitimate confrontation with the enemy. He called on all Yemenis to actively join the fight for freedom and independence. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review. Out of Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali. Abdul Latif, tell us the latest of what's going on in this accomplishment that has taken place by the Yemeni army.
Thank you so much. The Yemeni army has seized over 1,200 kilometers, as you mentioned, in Al-Jouf province. But Al-Yatama area is very important. It's the center of Khab Washa'a district. It is the most important district in Al-Jouf province for the largest space, and it is also an oil-rich district. And Saudi Arabia wants to maintain its power there to extract the oil from the land. Saudi Arabia is also located on the north of Khab Washa'a. Hadramaut is on the east of Khab Washa'a, and Amran and Sa'da, which are controlled by the Yemeni army, are located on the west of Khab Washa'a. Saudi Arabia wants to maintain its power there, wants to maintain its control over that district to make it as a key to launch new operations against the Yemeni army to take control of Amran and Sa'da. But the Yemeni army has liberated this area, which is now a route for the Yemeni army toward Saudi Arabia and also toward Hadramaut, which is on the east. So it is a very important achievement for the Yemeni army for the next operations, for the next military offensive launched by the Yemeni army to liberate the rest of the country, to liberate Hadramaut, to liberate Shabwa, and also for new and wider operations deep inside Saudi Arabia. So they lost this area, which is very important, and I believe it will lead to another losses by the Saudi-led coalition's forces, especially in the northern battlefronts.
Okay, we're keeping our eyes, of course, on that situation. Thank you for being with us out of Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali. Meanwhile, Christmas travel chaos continues across the world, hundreds more flights facing cancellations and delays due to the surge in the new COVID variant, Omicron. According to a flight tracking website, on Sunday alone, nearly 1,100 flights were scrubbed worldwide. There were thousands of delays as well. It's the third day that a staff shortage caused by a rise in COVID cases has placed airlines in a dilemma. Overall, more than 6,000 flights have been canceled over the long Christmas weekend. Now, the Chinese airlines are the most affected, with China Eastern scrapping more than 1,000 flights in just 2 days. American Airlines are also hit hard by the crisis. On Saturday alone, almost 1,000 flights originating from or headed to the U.S. were canceled. And that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
As Gabriel Boric's election victory shows, a new hope could be dawning across Latin America. For both the United States government and its Israeli ally, this is not good news, says Alan McLeod, journalist, in an article titled, "The Zionist Regime Freaks Out as Gabriel Boric's Elections Signals New Direction for Chile." Stay tuned for more. If its media is any indication, the Zionist regime is freaking out over the election results in Chile. The Jerusalem Post headline ran, "Anti-Zionist Gabriel Boric's presidential win leaves Chile's Jews worried," going on to explain that the 35-year-old president-elect called Israel a murderous regime and has the firm backing of the country's Palestinian community. Only in the final section of the article did it allude to the fact that Boric's far-right opponent, José Antonio Kast, was the son of a Nazi war criminal who escaped justice by fleeing to South America. The Times of Israel had a similar reaction to the news. Its headline read, "Chile's new president is bitter Israel critic whose win has many local Jews worried." It, too, glossed over Kast's background, describing him merely as a right-wing pro-Israel politician whose father was only likely a Nazi. In reality, as the Times of Israel itself has reported only weeks previously, the elder Kast voluntarily joined the Nazi party and was a senior lieutenant in Hitler's war machine. Haaretz was at least more open about who Kast was, however. It treated Boric's opposition to the Israeli regime apartheid as similarly problematic, seemingly equating supporting Palestine to perpetrating the Holocaust. In Chile election, Jews must choose between a Pinochet supporter and an Israel basher, it wrote, explaining that Kast's father was in Wehrmacht. Gabriel Boric demands that Chile's Jews denounce Israel's policies in an election driven more by who they are against than who they are for. The Jewish community is in a bind, unquote. Other outlets, such as Israel Hayom, were similarly concerned by Boric's victory. The Zionist regime did not release any statement. promising to create a new welfare state and move the country away from the free market capitalist model that has dominated since the days of military dictator Augusto Pinochet, Boric secured a hefty 54% of the vote in the recent election. Dr. Rodrigo Acana, a Chilean-Australian academic who hosts the Indestructible podcast, a show about contemporary Latin American politics, said his politics on several fronts are very progressive and should be commended. Adding, it is, however, Boric's long-standing positions on Palestine that trouble Israeli regime officials. Upon his election to the Chamber of Deputies in 2018, the former student protest leader immediately helped write a bill proposing a boycott of Israeli goods produced in the occupied territories and the Golan Heights. He has been a fervent opponent of the occupation, making several public statements against it, replying to an Israeli embassy social media post claiming that Israeli businesses are offering solutions on how to improve people's lives around the world. He said they could start with Palestine, for example, leaving the occupied territory. He also shared a picture of a mural containing a list of slain Palestinian children, writing, "The violence of the occupation is brutal and you pay with your life." Boric has firmly rejected illegal Israeli settlement building. On his official Instagram page, he published a map showing the gradual annexation of Palestine, describing it as a flagrant violation of international norms and human rights. He said, "The Zionist regime violates with impunity all UN resolutions and agreements that have urged it to stop building settlements on Palestinian territory. The violence of the occupation as the powerful countries look to the side, it is brutal. From Chile, we can contribute to change it," unquote. The new president of Chile has also strongly condemned house demolitions, which continue to this day. He asked, "How long will the world allow Israel to humiliate and violate the Palestinian people?" Boric has seen these demolitions and their effects up close. In August 2018, he was part of an official delegation of 11 Chilean parliamentarians who traveled to the occupied Palestinian territories. While there, he visited the cities of Al-Khalil, Beit Lahm, Jericho, Beit Jala, Ramallah, and Tel Aviv. He also wished to go to Gaza, but the Zionist regime authorities blocked him from entering. While in Palestine, he met with representatives of human rights organizations and with President Mahmoud Abbas, who was reportedly heartened by Boric's firm and courageous support to his people's cause. Abbas said the historical relations between our two countries are being strengthened. Just weeks after her release, Boric also made a point of publicly meeting with Ahed Tamimi, a Palestinian child jailed after slapping an Israeli regime troop who invaded her home. "She is not a symbol, she is a living fighter for the freedom of Palestine," the Chilean said. Israeli regime officials complained that Tamimi deserved a bullet. Boric was clearly moved by his time in the West Asia region. He reflected, "It is hard to believe the reality of the Israeli occupation of Palestine, the violence and the daily humiliation." Having such a vocal critique of its policies installed as president could pose a number of diplomatic challenges for the Zionist regime and is a problem the administration of Naftali Bennett could live without. Nevertheless, Borek's election triumph was likely not the preferred outcome in Washington and could be understood as part of a broader rising of an anti-establishment politics across the region. Recent elections in Venezuela, Peru, Bolivia, and Honduras have gone to the political left, while Brazil, the largest and most important nation in Latin America, will choose a new president in 2022. Workers' Party candidate Lula da Silva, who was imprisoned with U.S. help as a consequence of the Lava Jato scandal, is far and away ahead in the polls. Throughout 2000s, a wave of radicalism swept across Latin America as country after country elected anti-establishment governments critical of the United States regime. While the Bush and Obama administrations concentrated on the West Asia region, this rebel alliance grew stronger and more vocal. One example of this is on the question of Palestine, with South American nations becoming the state's most committed backers. All over the region, murals showing solidarity with the Palestinian cause can be seen. And while the rest of the world stayed silent, Latin American leaders spoke out about the Zionist regime crimes. After the 2010 attack on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, then Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez made a public speech declaring the Zionist regime a genocidal regime. He said, "I seize this opportunity one more time from the bottom of my soul. Damn you, Israel, and long live the Palestinian people." This was illustrative of a broader trend across the region. In 2005, not a single South American nation recognized Palestine as an independent state, totally all do. The U.S. Empire struck back in 2010s, organizing or supporting coups across the region and pioneering a new kind of lawfare, using legal means to bring down governments, as happened to Lula in Brazil. It appears, however, that a new hope could be dawning across Latin America. For both the United States regime and its Israeli ally, this is not good news, as it threatens both their economic and geopolitical interests. No wonder the Zionist media are so troubled by Borek's victory.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, poverty. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of poverty in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic texts, we see that the Islam or Quran and the Prophet, when we look at the texts related to the Quran and the narrations of the Prophet, it is said that the poverty is not a good thing. Therefore, we see that in Islamic lifestyle, especially in the Islamic teachings, there is a way in order to get rid of poverty and to make everyone living a standard life. So in order to give and providing the standard lifestyle for everyone, we can see a financial system, an economical system in the Islamic teachings, which is known as zakat and khums, which is known as infaq. If I can translate, like zakat is zakat, generally people know what does zakat mean. It's the alms or charities. Khums is as well a kind of charity, and infaq is known as charity. So basically, in the Islamic economical system, we see that Islam is taking care of people. It talks about the charities, it talks about the ways of helping people, the poor people. And why to do that? In order to bring them up, to take them out of the poverty and bringing them to a standard lifestyle, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We said that in the Islamic lifestyle, we can see that the teachings of Islam talks about an economical system where it takes people out of poverty and brings them to a standard lifestyle where they can live without poverty. Why is it important in Islam? It is because in the Islamic teachings, poverty is one of the punishments. Poverty is something which is undesirable in Islam. Why? Because this poverty leads towards disbelieving. This poverty leads people to the disbelieving. Why? Because a poor person, a needy person, the one who do not have money, when he does not have anything to eat or drink, when you ask him to do anything, they are ready to do. Why? Because he needs to feed his family, he needs to bring some money, he needs to bring food to the house, and therefore we can see the oppression, the crimes that are spread in the world. It is because there are some people who do not have anything to eat, who need money, who are in the state of being needy, and therefore whenever they get money from somewhere, they are ready to do in exchange of that money in order to pay back. Therefore, Islam says that it is the duty of the leader to provide people sustenance, to provide people sustenance which they need so that people do not commit crimes or sins and they remain as believers, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/EN.
Aperture.
Welcome back, everyone. We saw how profit maximization, fierce competition in the global job market led to wages well below the living wage, temporary contracts, and finally to exploitation in the job market right in the middle of Europe. The degree of exploitation in the tree workers case arguably allows a legal classification as forced labor or trafficking in human beings. The global business of exploitation of workers reaches some $44.3 billion yearly. It's said to be the world's third biggest crime business following the illegal arms and drugs trade. Reports by the International Labor Organization show that 1.5 million people are trapped in jobs in developed economies, including the European Union. Stay with us for the next part of our program.
Three young lawyers from Prague, Pavel Chizinski, Matos Jira, and Stepanka Mikova, took on his case.
I got in touch with this case first time January 2010 when I was visited by one Vietnamese worker who said that he worked in the forest and that he worked there for 3 months and was not paid. So I started to kind of get deeper in the situation, and he was surprised that I don't know about, you know, the situation, because there were hundreds of people. And we started to investigate the case more, and we found that he was absolutely right, that there were hundreds of people. The way how they did it was quite smart and was very efficient. And it was not only for Vietnamese workers. They basically exploited each significant minority in the Czech Republic. They started with Vietnamese, and they kept going with Mongolians, Romanians, Bulgarians, and then they ended up with Slovak citizens.
The attorneys made some disturbing findings as they researched the so-called tree workers case. Many victims were also from the new EU states. Around 600 came from Romania, as well as dozens from Slovakia, Bulgaria, Poland, Lithuania, and Hungary. One address recurs time and again. Uvali Potrati, number 333, on the eastern outskirts of Prague. However, in the street, it is impossible to find a company nameplate, bell, or any other sign of its existence. Dozens of companies are officially registered here. Madeira Servicio, the latest employment agency and one which is still in operation, also gives Potrati as its address. The agency lists Less and Forest as one of its most important clients and expected a turnover of about 3 million euros in 2011. However, there is neither a telephone number nor a name on the webpage. Emails are returned automatically.
Why is a company like Less and Forest getting the tenders when they have been shown to subcontract work to people like Martinac and Mercos? And Martinac has been accused of criminal activity in the past. This is not the first illegal or semi-legal affair that has been connected to him. Why is Less and Forest working with this man or working with associates of this man? And why is the State Forest giving tenders to a company that has associates like this?
The foreign forestry workers are organized into small groups in secluded forest areas, located all over the country. They constantly move location. Hardly anyone seems to take any notice of their situation.
All these dirty companies, Afumigat and Wood Service Praha, they did not pay, not only the workers, they didn't pay people that were offering accommodation capacities for the workers. They didn't pay people who organized the transportation of the workers. They didn't pay anybody. There are only debts behind them.
In summer 2010, there were 70 Romanian tree workers based in the southwest of the country in Jelajna Ruda. Gindrich Martinac came along personally to rent the accommodation for his workers. His promise to pay the landlord, Roman Rushal, was sealed with a handshake. Jan Lenka was born in Slovakia. He is a qualified forest worker and came to the Czech Republic in autumn 2010 after seeing a Wood Service Praha advertisement in the newspaper. After several weeks without pay, he returned home and contacted the attorneys in Prague. In April 2011, Jan Lenka was invited to a first hearing by the Czech police, several months after reporting the matter.
At the beginning, we thought that once we report this case to police, they will set a team because there is a huge number of exploited workers, and they will start to question them and they will start to search for information and do the regular police day-to-day work. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. We filed the criminal complaint in summer last year, and so far there are three people questioned.
Actually, right now we are really motivated because it's obvious if we give up, these people will not get any compensation at all, and the wrongdoers will continue with their business for next year, and that's something we really want to stop now.
At this time, Fa Hung Long met with attorneys who work with the La Strada organization in Prague. Long was admitted into the protection program set up for victims of human trafficking. He was hidden in a safe house and looked after by the authorities. La Strada then worked to help him return home after 3 years away.
Usually the society feels that the sex trafficking is somehow something really sensitive and people are very sorry about it. But labor trafficking, it's not that much like sensitive in the society, and people are able to tolerate, and they will rather say, okay, it's the fault of the foreigner. If he doesn't like, he can leave.
Giao Tak, north of Hanoi, is Fa Hung Long's home village. He has shared the fate of many here. In 2008, like Long, over 30 young men paid a large sum of money to obtain entry documents and a work permit for the Czech Republic. The corrupt system thus started in their own country. The Human Rights Office of the OSCE, the UN Relief Fund, and other international organizations are supporting the work being done by the local attorneys and NGOs to resolve the tree workers' case. However, state authorities generally find it hard to admit to and combat such cases. Political loss of face, economic interests, corruption, a strict migration policy. Many factors play a role when one's own country becomes the center of attention in matters regarding the violation of human rights.
The crime of human trafficking is actually the third profitable crime in the world after guns and drugs. However, we have very, very little cases when people are actually compensated, and in most cases they are returning back into the home countries without any financial resources, so they are again at risk of trafficking.
There is a disturbing increase in extreme exploitation all over the world, and whereas we make the link with the traditional slavery from a long time ago, then we see that in an international context, the same amount of exploitation is actually occurring in industrialized countries, in economies where you would not expect them in a modern day age. The same kind of abuses occur in the agriculture in the south of Spain, agriculture in the south of Italy, or mushroom pickers in Ireland, or berry pickers in Scandinavia. Those are all specific economic activities who seem to be very prone to extreme exploitation. The tree workers' case shows how vulnerable migrant workers are on labor markets where they don't speak the language, where they don't have any support structure.
The managing directors of Less Holding have categorically declined to give any film interviews. The state forestry authorities Lesi Czeskie Republiki and the Ministry of Agriculture react to interview requests by sending out press releases and their answers in writing. They stated that they had cautioned the contractual partners to adhere to labor law and that they were supporting the state regulatory authorities. However, they do not regard themselves as being directly responsible for such matters. In a press release, the Ministry of Agriculture writes, "The exploitation of the mainly foreign migrant workers is deplorable. but neither LESICR nor the Ministry of Agriculture have the authority to act in this matter. After media reports about the tree workers' case, the Ministry of Labor did at least send out employment inspectors. They established that Afumikata had illegally employed workers, withdrew the agency's license, and imposed a fine of 53,000 euros. However, by that time, the company had long since stopped its activities and was bankrupt. There has never been any mention of compensation for the around 2,000 exploited individuals who worked in the Czech state forest.
Mr. Ong's conditions here last month before he left to Vietnam were really miserable. We registered him as a victim of trafficking in human beings. Unfortunately, his stay in the program was terminated by Czech police without any justification, without any argument. It was just so. And he was illegal again, and he was hiding on several places in Prague. And basically, there we were not able to renew his legal status, no matter how hard he was willing to cooperate with the police.
The letters which arrived at the attorney's office at about the same time stated the facts a little differently. The Prague police officially announced that they had stopped most of the investigations. There will be no court case in the Czech Republic.
I think that there is no way to deal with it. There, even despite some media pressure, the police doesn't want to. It's a little bit sad to see that you are helpless, that you cannot come to the result you think that should be good.
Hello, George. George, I had some news which are not so positive. What happened was, first of all, there was one big investigation of all activities they did with Mr. Mercos. Then they split it, police split it into five different individual small proceedings. And one was the tax issues, one was a fraud, one was trafficking in human beings and organized crime. And they are now terminating one after another one. And regarding civil claims, the companies are just nutshells. They don't own anything. The Wood Service Praha company that was employing you is now owned by one Vietnamese, and that guy is not in the country.
Why could escape like this?
Unfortunately, the Czech police is just not willing to participate in trying to fight the justice now. I'm in touch with
them. They are corrupt, the both sides, and the Czech police and the Romanian police. They are corrupt.
So many things that have happened in the forest here in the Czech Republic is completely below the standard of what the Czech Republic as a first world nation should provide for workers, be they Czech workers or foreign workers. The US State Department actually reduce the Czech Republic's ranking. They have three tiers in regards to human trafficking. And the Czech Republic was moved down to the second tier this year by the US State Department because they were seen as not doing enough to protect the rights of foreign workers. And this case was one of the reasons.
Till this day, we don't have a single one, single case that somebody was found guilty of committing crime, trafficking human beings in labor exploitation in the Czech Republic, which is sad because it can say two things. It can say that either trafficking in human beings in labor exploitation and work exploitation doesn't exist in the Czech Republic, or there is something wrong with the system of police investigating the cases, state prosecutors and courts.
Well, this extreme but unfortunately not isolated case of modern slavery shows just how vulnerable migrant workers are. It highlights some undeniable trends in the EU labor market and calls for an urgent and structural response from European and national governments. And that's it for this week. Do join us next time for another documentary. Until another episode right here at Aperture, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters. 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.